When I wrote this talk, I was wondering about a few things, and I did not know how to pitch for this audience, for starters, because I thought it's HTML5 Live, and I just came back from San Francisco 2 days ago, so I'm still in that time shift. And I've been a JavaScript guy my whole career, so to say. I wrote a few books on JavaScript, and I just came back from a JavaScript meetup in San Francisco that just randomly happened while I spoke at the conference as well. And I thought I knew everything about JavaScript. I came into that JavaScript meetup, and it was all about Node.js and databases and like Redis and scaling of different in-memory databases and these kind of things. So it made me understand that we're constantly moving, and it's really interesting that we do this. And tomorrow I'm going to speak in Poland as well at a conference, and there I'm going to talk a bit about the how cool it is to be a developer in that world. There's always something new to find out. We're never finished, and that's a good thing. I mean, my career has never been boring so far, and you have the same chance. And with HTML5, we came up with saying, like, we changed the web, we changed the approach. You heard it from Bruce this morning, like, XHTML didn't go anywhere, HTML wasn't good enough, and we had to find a way to actually build real applications and make websites really, really good for our end users. And to some degree, we lost this. To some degree, we don't do that at the moment. So the talk that I'm giving here now is a bit about, like, why don't we do that and how we can make HTML5 the evolution that it really is. Because right now, a lot of HTML5 myths are going out there. It's like, yeah, it's about mobile phone development. And it's about, like, building things for iPads. And people say it's not really web development anymore, and that's not true. Bruce showed this morning that HTML5 was made with backwards compatibility in mind, but we keep forgetting that right now because we're too excited about new technology. And that to me is a deja vu. I always find this when new technology comes out. We had Flash, we had Silverlight, and then we did everything in them. We had CSS-only menu systems. I found this a bit of a, like, we always get too excited about a new technology and build everything in it rather than really understanding the technology before we actually apply it to see what the difference is, why we should use it. We just have to use it then, like, oh, DHTML was the best thing ever. Then we did everything with Ajax, and now everything has to be HTML5. And a lot of people complain that we can't do the same things that we can do with native applications because it's in web technologies. And at the same time, we never question if we really should use these technologies. But we're coming back to that later. So I always get a bit of feeling of a deja vu when I think about new technologies. It's things are always coming the same way. We find new technologies and we want to do things with them. A few years ago, we actually had already achieved the pinnacle of web design. We made the web perfect, and we made it absolutely amazing, and you didn't need to do anything else anymore. And what I'm talking about, of course, the Java Water Applet. There was nothing better than having rainbow drops going on top of an image. It meant that we can show off how good we are in math, that we can do these reflections and all these things, and also meant that our clients had the opportunity to put flashy things on their websites without having to think about the content. Because who wants to have content on their website when we can have rotating ad signs, rainbow dividers, and, of course, the Rainbow Water Applet? And back then, the problem was that these things cost money and they were closed technology. So nowadays, we can actually use Canvas for that. So we have the Canvas water element right now that uses HTML Canvas for that. And we can do the same thing. We can definitely make our websites better by allowing people to put ripples on top of something else. We can also change the images as it's open technology and the source code is available right now. And we have all kind of features in there, and we can change the ripple size. And it's all open and all there for us. We can also go really wild and actually go into 3D and use the WebGL water simulator. That was something we did in the developer demo scene competition in Mozilla. Somebody came up with that. So that one simulates water in WebGL, and it does all the physics right, does all the reflections right, does everything, the refractions of the water in itself right. And these are the things that we actually go at right now and look at it and go, ooh, this is amazing. This is HTML5. This is what you should be looking for. And people get excited about this. And in the end, like, who cares? What is this good for except for a water game or except for something simulating? We're just showing off technology to each other instead of really making the web better. So it's, to me, it's HTML5 is falling into the same trap we had before with other technologies, that we're thinking about HTML5 bells and whistles, rather than thinking about HTML5 as improving the web as a platform, as making our websites better for end users out there. And that's not where we should be going, because Flash already went there. And we had all these skip intro buttons because we made a 5-minute intro in Flash, welcome to our website, instead of using Flash for the things it was really good for, like games and upload facilities and these kind of things, where HTML was not good enough and could not do it. We had to use Flash. What we used Flash the first 5 years for was tunnel pages that keep our clients from actually entering the information that they came for. And we were very excited about this, and people paid money for that because we got excited about the technology. And now we're doing the same mistakes over and over again. And I think it's just a shame because we don't want to go there. A thing that really scares me is that we're getting back to a best feud with a certain browser mentality. So a lot of websites that are coming out right now that are the pinnacle of web design, that the coolest thing ever, tells you you need Chrome or you need Firefox or you need Opera or you need this and that browser. And that is exactly the problem we have with Internet Explorer 6. If we clap and applaud to something that is Chrome only or Safari only and is a production website, we are not allowed to complain that Internet Explorer 6 is still around, because it's the same bloody mistake. If in 8 years' time we have WebKit problem, that WebKit doesn't get upgraded anymore, not as likely as Internet Explorer 6, but it could happen, we have the same problem again. And we made it because we got too excited about one single browser and about one way of building something. This goes as far as the this here. Toyota released a website, It's a Car, where they show one of their new cars, the Yaris, up. And the car site uses new HTML5 technology. And I'm like, great, finally, somebody uses cool web HTML technology in the new in the real website out there. And then you actually, when you go there with a browser that is not Chrome, you get to this video, a production-sized video of a car salesman telling you that this page uses WebGL and this page uses HTML5 and this page is really good if you use it in Chrome for watching it. The irony of it is if you go in Firefox and you actually work around their detection of a browser, everything works. The site does nothing better in Firefox than it does in Chrome than it does in Firefox. But there were probably a few bugs in production in the main site somewhere down the line where they then said, okay, forget it. We're not going to support the other browsers. We're just going to support Chrome. And instead of just doing that the right way and not giving the technology that some browsers can't do, not to these browsers, by using something like Modernizer, they produced a video, a full-length video that you have to endure to basically go to that website if you don't use Chrome. And there's a few things wrong with this. And first of all, I don't go to a car salesman to learn about HTML5. That's something that just doesn't work with me. But what really, really got me was I was reminded of one thing. If you go out to your clients and start talking to them, that the people that want to have a website, and start telling them, oh, we're using WebGL and HTML5 and CSS3 transitions and maybe animations, this is what they understand.
For a number of years now, work has been proceeding in order to bring perfection to the crudely conceived idea of a transmission that would not only supply inverse reactive current for use in unilateral phase detractors, but would also be capable of automatically synchronizing cardinal grammars. Such an instrument is the turbo-encapulator. Now, basically, the only new principle involved is that instead of power being generated by the relative motion of conductors and fluxes, it is produced by the modal interaction of magnetoreluctance and capacitive directance. The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated annuli surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurting bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The latter consisted simply of 6 hydrocoptic marsal vanes, so fitted to the amphibian lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented.
Why do we do this? Why do we tell our users about the technology? Technology is there to help them. Technology is there to build better interfaces, more responsive interfaces, allow them to achieve the goal that they came for. There is no need to tell people we're using WebGL on the website. If we test for WebGL support and then use it, totally fine. If the interface is better, is more responsive, is more interesting, great. But telling people what kind of technology you use is the most useless thing ever, and we do it over and over and over again. I live in North London, and my post box is basically the place where all the pizza delivery guys are really happy because they put about 400 of these leaflets in there every day. And every day I get one of those leaflets, and I never order a pizza, but I look at them, and the leaflet doesn't tell me what format the leaflet is, how many colors have been used for printing it, how many of those were printed, what kind of paper it's on. It just tells me how much the pizza costs and the telephone number where to order it. And this is what our websites are. And if you talk about HTML5 to your clients, don't do that. Don't tell them that you're using HTML5. Just show them the better example and show them how good it is. And as a fallback for old browsers, like the ones that should have died years ago, have a video, for example, that explains the functionality and what they're missing. And not just saying like, oh, you can't do this. Sucks to be you. Sorry. Have some information out there that actually says what they're missing and what they could be doing, and have an offering of different browsers and not say, like, download this one. This is the only one out there. And the formula works. We've been web developing for years and years and years. We've been separating our HTML from our CSS, from our JavaScript, and we made things maintainable that way, and we made things beautiful that way. And we made things translatable, like localizable. And with HTML5, all of that seems to be thrown out of the window. A lot of HTML5 demos are just like, you write HTML for a single effect, like lots of elements in there that don't make any sense and these kind of things. So don't think that HTML5 is something different. It's the same we did before, just with better tools that we can use to give people a better experience. For me, everything that I learned as a web developer, and I'm quite sure that you all can hold up your hand if you ask that, is by looking at source code. I found something, I tried it out on a website, I'm like, how the hell did they do this? And did my command U, or like command shift U, command option U, convert it on which browser, and looked at the source code and started fiddling with it. Copied and pasted it, saved it on my hard drive, played around with it until I broke it, and then started analyzing what they've actually done, started reading the documentation. So your code is actually incredibly important for other developers to look at, and for prospective hirers to look at as well. If you apply at Mozilla and I look at your website and your code is all over the place, or Amazon Norm in there and these kind of things, I wonder what kind of production code you would do as well. So what we put on our websites in the code is as important as we make it look, which is a divide right now. And Bruce is one of the people that actually says, okay, HTML5 is as important to write good HTML code and to write semantic HTML code, and other people don't think that way. Because the problem with semantics in HTML5 is that so far, no browser does anything with it. You can put as many sections, articles, headers, and footers in your page, the browsers really don't care. What you can do, you can style them and you can do things with them. This has headers, footers, and sections in there because they make sense. But an article, for example, should be syndicated across the web, but no browser has a syndication method for it. The heading structure should come from sections and articles and the nesting of them, but the heading structure that browsers only give to assistive technology like screen readers is still H1 to H6. So the browsers really don't care about the HTML semantics as we have right now and do a lot of mistakes with it. The reason is that nobody uses them. So it's a bit of a problem that we have a chicken and egg thing here. So if you don't use HTML5, then browser vendors don't really see the problems, don't get any files bugs filed, fair enough, and don't see it as a necessity. We'd rather spend our time on making WebGL fast or making full screen video available and doing new like WebSockets and doing all these cool techie computery things, not the human interface thingies. Semantics are always boring for computer scientists, but they're very, very important if you think about it, that you put content on the page and on the web that is structured. HTML5 and HTML give structures to text documents. That's what it's for, nothing more. So if you don't give structure with your HTML, you're just using it the wrong way. And the issue with that is that, you know, we don't see many things in the wild right now. We don't see that people use these new elements because they don't do anything. And that's something we have to break. And we can only break it by using it, by finding problems with it and filing bugs to browsers and say, like, support this, please. Other people on the other side of the spectrum basically say, semantics, I don't care. HTML, who cares? just performance is the most important thing. A browser should be fast, snappy. We should be as cool as native code. It should scroll fast. It could do these kind of things. A button should be pressable while the page is loading, and you can't do that if you don't put it in the HTML but generate it with JavaScript and these kind of things. So that's when code gets generated that actually is performant but really, really not readable. And you see a lot of people, and Bruce has done this before, showing code on the page, and you're like, what the hell happened there? A button that was like 20 divs nested in each other with class names that were one character or two characters. Like, what happened there was Google Web Toolkit. And what happened there was that the output of that page, which in this case was Gmail, was optimized for the best performance out there. This was not written by a human. This is not meant to be read by a human. This was meant to be optimized for one only browser. So complaining about people writing bad HTML code should not be the case if this code was generated, because they didn't do it that way. What you should look at is the source code that generated the code in the end. Whereas if you write these things by hand and you don't understand it, then you should not write HTML. But it's very easy to point fingers and like say, okay, that was totally wrong and fail and bad and never understand it, instead of just understanding where it came from and what the reason was. So to me, if it comes to developing HTML5 and for you to use it in real production, there's a happy middle ground. Use the correct semantic HTML for the task. A button is a button. That is as simple as that. A button does not only give you the functionality of a button, the click event that any other element can give you in JavaScript, but it also gives you keyboard access for free. It gives you the opportunity for screen readers to tie into a button. And if you put a div with an onclick element in there, an onclick handler in there, you can't have the same functionality. The problem with that is, of course, that the button is very hard to style, and it looks inconsistent across all the browsers. So what should be your task? Your task should not be to not use buttons. Your task should be to file bugs to browsers and say, like, why is it that after 12 years of web development, buttons can't be styled? And they should be styled consistently, and you should be able to do that, because you want to use the right semantic element for the right job. But you can't right now because of a visual problem. That's a browser problem that can be fixed if enough people ask for it. But nobody asks for it. Instead, they use a div element with a click handler on it, and who suffers in the end is the end users. And that's not what we should be doing. Use the new HTML elements when they make sense and are stable. So there's a few of them that actually only work in Chrome. There's a few of them that only work in Firefox. This is good for testing them out. This is good for running them in like a lab environment, so to say. But if they're not supported cross-browser, probably not a good idea to make your application relying on it. You can use them, but you should not actually just build from one browser, as we said before. And the thing about the HTML5 elements when it comes to styling, the only problem is IE6. IE6 does not allow you to style HTML5 elements because it does not realize these are actually HTML elements. So what you have to do is actually generate them once with JavaScript, and then you can start styling them. That's the magic of Internet Explorer 6. Don't ask me what's going on there, but if you did it this way, then you don't have a problem. So have a JavaScript in there to generate a few elements, and all of a sudden you can style them. Now, purists would again say, oh, but wait, Chris, you're using JavaScript to style things or to allow for styling? Should not styling be available when JavaScript is turned off? That's over, guys. That's totally over. It's totally fine to have JavaScript. You should not have JavaScript dependencies that could be done natively, that could be done like a button, actually sending a form off. Doesn't have to be an on-click handler on that button. It could be a submit handler on the form. But you cannot just say that we have to make everything work without JavaScript. That's not possible anymore. For example, Bruce showed video. And you can, in the video API, you can actually test if a certain browser supports a certain format. And it gives you then a Boolean back to say, like, yeah, I play OGG video. I play MP4. I play this kind of video. You can start loading that video and playing it. I cannot do that on the command line. I cannot do that on the server. I have to do that in JavaScript in the browser, because the browser is the media player in this case. So there's no way to actually have a non-JavaScript fallback for a video unless you want to support all of them in the page itself, which is what you normally do. Write for humans, convert for computers. Write your code readable and use the right semantic elements. Use readable classes, not class 1, 2, 3 and blue left, because blue left might be green top in the next design roundabout, and then you have to rewrite all of them. Convert for computers, and that's one thing that a lot of people don't do yet. Live web pages don't necessarily have to be the code that you maintain. You can optimize a few things. You can run them through a converter script to change spaces to tabs, for example, or to make everything in one line, to minify it, to have a preprocessor for CSS, for example, so you don't have to put all the CSS prefixes in there. That's totally fine, and we have the technology to do that. But so many people don't do that yet, and instead just like write code optimized for a browser by hand. That's something a build script should do for you, because then you don't have to worry about it when the browser doesn't need that anymore. You just change your build script and not all your source code. And clearly marked generated code. If something is coming out of Google Web Toolkit or SharePoint or other problems, then just have a massive comment on top of it saying, like, this is generated HTML code. Do not touch this. Do not edit this. So nobody goes on the server and SSH into it and VIs the text file and starts editing your generated code. And this also stops all these people from pointing at your code and going, ha ha, look what he's written. I haven't. Drupal did. Or SharePoint did. So point at the right person, because that stops accusations out there. Using new capabilities are actually pretty easy. Have I forgotten something there? Hang on. Yeah, avoid unnecessary dependencies. We had this before. Like, if something can be done in HTML, do it in HTML. If it's better, faster, cooler in JavaScript, fair enough. But basic functionality should be there for everybody. And this is a great example. This is an upload facility that we've written that you can use in your sites. It's a demo that is downloadable. This should fall back to a normal file upload file. I want to upload a photo. Cool. Here's a input type file, and you upload one photo at a time. Really annoying, really, really painful to do if you upload 400 photos. And that's why a lot of content management systems suck, because they basically didn't do the simple thing that we can do right now, which is using the HTML5 file API. That one allows you to drag and drop, for example, an image into the browser. The image then gets actually put in the canvas. You can write some some text on it. So in this case, it's one of those demotivation posters. And then once you're done, it uploads it in the background. It generated a new image from the image that you dragged into the browser and the text that you typed in, all in the browser. No server necessary. The upload happens to a post request in Ajax as well. And now you can actually here authenticate with Twitter to tweet about this image or to upload it to another facility and so on and so forth. This is possible now. This is supported in all the HTML5 browsers out there. You can do this, but I don't see it done. And that annoys me, because I want this as an end user. I don't want to upload images one by one. I don't do any photos on Facebook because the upload facility sucks. But on Flickr, I don't have a problem. I drag the thing in and it works. So think about using these capabilities after testing for them. And there are so many things you can make better for our end users. And the main trick, and I keep sounding like a broken record about this, is progressive enhancement. Make this thing work for everybody, then put the shiny on top of it after you actually tested that it is supported. This is how HTML works. HTML is the structure. It shows your page without a CSS. It's not pretty, but it's readable. With CSS, then, it becomes more readable. You have different fonts, you have colors, you have layout, which is something that is not quite there yet in CSS, but we've done it for years in a hacky way. And a lot of people give progressive enhancement a bad reputation now. They say it's extra work, it's not necessary anymore. It will bite you if you write something that is dependent on a certain browser or a certain environment. It will also bite you if an end user gets a button and he clicks on it and it doesn't nothing happens. That should never be the case. And it's so simple. There's an if statement in almost every language out there. If that thing is supported, then do it. If it's an upload, okay, here's a file upload. If it's better, hide the file upload and make a drop element in there that people can drop their files into. You can always fall back to it. If somebody comes on a mobile phone and an old Nokia or on a BlackBerry, they can get the upload input element again. They don't do drag and drop on a mobile phone normally, if it's not supporting a touch interface. So progressive enhancement to me was always the way to build things, and it's because it's simple. You don't jump into a river without looking how deep it is, or if there's any sea serpents in there or something like that. You don't go on the ice without actually throwing a rock there or chasing a fat kid on it first. Because you don't want to actually break in and get a cold. But on the web, we're like, yeah, whatever, everybody has my browser, it's totally fine. Everybody has the latest Flash plugin and like Silverlight and loves these kind of things. So we do that. Just test for it and then apply it. There's no logic, no hard logic behind that. And to me, progressive enhancement is more methodology than a technology approach. It's about thinking about, well, how this thing can fail in so many ways and building the one thing that is bulletproof and then layering on top. And if you build a progressive enhancement, any future technology can come around and you can just put another layer on it. If you build not with a progressive enhancement, the next technology will replace the last layer and it's a mess and you have to rewrite the whole code and so on and so forth. It's really, really a clever way of doing it. We have awesome opportunities on the web right now. And I'm using the word awesome, although I never use it. Weird. We can replace technology alien to the browser with native technology. And we showed that before with video, and that's wonderful. I mean, I've done accessibility for so many years, and Flash and keyboard accessibility of video was always a big, big problem. So you always had to find an API to actually call the Flash movie from and create buttons in the page and so on. And it just did not do it for me. So in HTML5, I don't need to do that kind of stuff. The HTML5 video controls are keyboard accessible out of the box. The video element is just another element in the page. I can do any CSS transformation, transition, zooming on it. I can overlay videos one over the other without having the problem with Flash that everything comes in the forefront. I can actually hide a video offline and off screen and just use Canvas to get images from it and convert these images to something else. We talked about the green screen example beforehand. With Canvas, I have full access to a video and every single pixel and the color of that pixel at every time in the movie. So you can do all kind of like edge detection and face detection and these kind of things in JavaScript nowadays. We can improve existing interactions, like a drag and drop instead of a file upload, or a slider instead of having to enter a number. All these things are natively there for us now. We just have to use it. Like Bruce showed this morning, the best thing about the new form elements is that on an iPhone or an Android phone, it actually switches the keyboard for you. I mean, how many times did you get to a website that you just open in your browser on your phone, and it's just like, okay, type in your telephone number now, and you have to switch to the number keyboard, and then they don't get the plus sign and these kind of things. With a tell field, you would have the validation and switching to the right keyboard automatically in there just by putting the right HTML attribute in there. You can add interactivity to previously static things. Images, for example, were always like, an image in the page. If I wanted to paint on that image, I actually had to do an applet or a Flash movie or that, and then actually on the server use image magic to save the new new image. With Canvas, I can take any image, I can paint it, I can make it into a 3D image as well, like all kind of pixel manipulation that you can do in Photoshop, you can now do in JavaScript in a browser, and there's really cool demos out there. And you can actually save an image as inside the browser as well as a Base64 encoded string. And we can replace simulated interfaces with real ones. The sliders that we showed before, the date picker, all of these things can be done in the browser at the moment. And you don't have to use the jQuery 600K, 400 JavaScript templates, CSS files and everything, date picker there anymore. If you just see if the browser supports it and then put it in there. To a degree, Opera has a good date picker. Chrome and Firefox has a text field that gives you like arrows to go up and down. So there's a bit of testing going on there again. But again, if nobody complains, they're not going to fix it. So let's complain. Let's say we want this and we want to use it right now. You promised us in HTML5, in the specs, that all the browser writers have written together that these things can be done, so we should be doing them. It's not a revolution that we have in HTML5. It's really an evolution of what we do right now. And we don't know quite yet what to do with it. We're a bit overwhelmed with the opportunities. I mean, this is the platypus. We still don't know what that animal is for. And something is something probably went wrong there. But they're just wonderful. They're just like, it always makes me wonder, like, okay, where did evolution go wrong and what is this thing for? I also love the creativity of German scientists because the name in German is Schnabeltier, which means beak animal. Like, oh yeah, look at this. What the? That's a beak animal. Fine. It's like dark matter. Really? You didn't come up with a better term for that. So we have an evolution of the web. We don't change the web. We don't replace everything that we've done in the last few years. And a lot of people try to do that right now and think this is HTML5. It isn't. We've got 10 years of experience. What not to do? Let's not do that again just because it's a new technology. So a lot of it is like about when it comes to competition between browsers and competition about standards, people say it's surviving of the fittest. That's always a quote from Darwin. If you read the books, it actually says it's not the strongest of the species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the ones most responsive to change. And this is what HTML and web technologies have always been. I could always see if the browser supports CSS and then apply CSS. I could always read out your screen size and actually give you a menu on the right-hand side or on the left-hand side. I could do it with JavaScript in the past. I could always... HTML in itself is responsive to change. Like, if the browser does not support the date picker element, an input type date falls back to a text box. Works. You don't need to worry about it. It actually does it for the end user. And you don't have to write an extra fallback. So all these things are there. These technologies are responsive to change. I had a few comparisons because I gave a lot of talks at mobile events, and I always have to defend the web there because people are like, yeah, I've got this cool Android with 10-finger touch if I write it in Java, and on iOS device, if I write it in Cocoa, I've got 11 fingers, which is always a bit confusing to me. But fair enough. And a lot of these things are not available for us. They're not really working there. But it's unfair to compare them. It's also stupid to compare them. Native apps are speedboats. They're built for one purpose. They're basically there to be speedy, to be cool, to win races. And web apps are hovercraft, which are there to be speedy on the water, but you can also go on land if you need to. So a native app cannot do it. A native app is not as responsive and can change itself as simply as a website could or a web application could. Because I can load things on demand on the web. I'm already online. I'm already there. What annoys me most is when people get very excited about apps, and then you're in the States and you don't have a data plan, and all of a sudden your smartphone is a dumb phone. Because every single app, my favorite example is British Airways. British Airways, great app to basically get your boarding pass. You need to be online to get your boarding pass. What's the point of that? So I don't want to be online to get my boarding pass because I might be in a plane where I have to turn off the phone anyways. And I'm in a different country where I don't have a data plan. So don't tell me that apps are better because they're in the system when people don't use them properly. The real comparison, though, and I always say, it's Playmobil versus Lego. As a kid, I always had Legos. I'm the third child of a son of a coal miner, so we never had much money, so I got all the shit from my siblings. And it was always this big box of Legos with no explanation what that was in the past or what you can build with it. And the richer kids always had these cool Playmobil things. You know, they had these cars and ships and planes, and the cars could basically drive, and you could drop them without bits falling off, and my Lego cars would always break apart. And their ships would actually swim, and my ships would sink. But when I said, like, okay, I'm bored of playing boat now, I'm going to play plane now, and rearrange my Legos to make a plane out of my boat, the kid with Playmobil was standing there like, okay, I got to go to my parents and beg for more toys. And that's exactly what web versus native is. Native is a single system that actually is built for one purpose. And with a website, I've got all these bricks that I can rearrange, all these things that I can put together, and it can make, my website can mutate according to what the user has. A web application could be beautiful on Chrome and actually work on Internet Explorer 6. It's not a problem. A native app, you would have to download different apps for all these different platforms, and that's not fun to do. And I think it's time in HTML5 to stop imitating and to start innovating on the HTML5 and the web and the web as a platform itself. This was at a hotel in Amsterdam. It's a great iPhone interface, right? The only problem is it wasn't my Android. So they actually gave me the iPhone experience at look and feel on my Android because it realized it's a mobile phone. But it's not an iPhone. It should not have to look like that. It's not something that is actually makes it more native for me, because there is what this is not an iPhone. What's going on here? There's no consistent look and feel on Android. That's a problem for them. But it's actually a good thing as well, because your applications don't have to look like that. You should not imitate a native application, because you will always lose. You will always make people frustrated, because they expect them then to work like a native app, and we can't just do all of that yet. And the web is huge. I don't understand how people think you have to go to an app store to put your HTML5 stuff there, when you can also put it on the web. This is connectivity around the world. This is how many people are online, and you can reach all of them by just putting your stuff on the web. The Financial Times just proved with their HTML5 application that they have more readers on their web application than on the iPad application, which I found quite impressive, because I didn't think that would be the case. I would think that readers of newspapers would just download an app and go for that. But when you think about it, they just probably read it on a desktop, and when it syncs then to their iPad, to the things that they haven't read, they can read that on the train, and when they come back home again, it reloads the rest of the pages. That's the kind of fluent information flow that we should have with applications. So we have old challenges but better weapons with it. Why that doesn't start, I don't know yet. Okay, there we go. So the web stuff is the same that we had before. We have the same problems with cross-browser, we have the same problems with our project managers not understanding what we really do, but we have really cool new technology to play with. And we can play with this application in an unobtrusive manner. So actually put that in the page and make the page work that way. That would be awesome to play, wouldn't it? So here's some new technology to play with. Flexible layout with media queries. Native animation with CSS, dynamic painting with Canvas, SVG, 3D interface with WebGL, local and offline storage, file APIs, and video. These are all the things you can use today, now do it. Use a polyfill if you want to support older browsers, but this is all in your stuff. And you can do amazingly cool stuff with that. This is the Boston Globe, just released a month ago or so. And this is the same website on different devices. They did not build an app for each of those devices. They just used media queries to make the website resize itself accordingly to that device. And they're using offline storage to allow you to read on the iPad when you're on the underground without having to be connected. And this is as simple as it was. There's a good write-up how they've done it. I'm syncing with the developers right now to do an interview with them for Mozilla as well. It's a wonderful example of how it could be done. Map animation is an older example right now, CSS3 animation. And that one is an animation that you would think is Flash. So this one here has this wonderful transitions and all these things. So all of that is actually HTML. And it's just CSS animation and CSS transitions. Works across the different browsers, works in Firefox, in Safari, works in Chrome. And when you look at the source code of that, I don't think we can actually in this case, it falls back to a list of images with an explanation what the current scene is showing. So instead of writing a fallback afterwards, they actually planned the script of the animation in HTML and then wrote the animation on top of it. And that's a pretty clever way of giving the information to browsers that can't do animation and show it beautifully in browsers that actually do animation. There's a tool coming, Animatable, which is actually that one was built with. They're looking for funding right now, so that's why it's been still waiting and waiting and waiting. But a few other people are working on that right now as well. You know what it means in the end. It will be that it's animated banners on iPads rather than because Flash doesn't work there. So people will use it for that, but why not? I think at least we have something in the page. This is SVG and Canvas. This was for Chrome's 3rd birthday, I think it was. And this is an interactive timeline of what browsers used to be. And all of that is clickable, and you can move it around, and you can actually read the information about all these browsers. And that's a beautiful interactive way of actually showing a web page. And it falls back to a static page again as well. So this can be done with these new technologies if you just start embracing them. WebGL is always a bit of an issue. It's great for 3D gaming. It's cool to build 3D stuff in it, but why do you really need it? A great example that I found is Pepets.com that do these papercraft things for your desk. And they're a bit like Pokemon, so you can fight them against each other. And they actually have a button here saying, like, switch to 3D. And if you click on that one, it loads the 3D model and replaces the original image. And now you can actually see the product in 3D. and you can move it around, all these three things. If the browser does not support WebGL, that button doesn't show up. Done. You support the coolest, newest browser, and you have something for the old users as well. And you don't even load the WebGL when it's not supported. So that's a clever way of actually using that kind of technology. And yesterday I wrote these slides in a cafe here in London, and I had this HTML5 logo on my screen. This guy next to me said, "Do you do HTML5?" I'm like, "What gave me away?" And he actually works in he's a 3D designer, and he works with companies that do like metal parts and like pipes and this kind of thing. And he actually built a WebGL thing for the iPad that actually allows you to zoom into a tube and actually get the different fittings and all these things in there. So there are use cases for it. It's just not for everybody, and we don't all need to use WebGL. Local storage is a wonderful thing. It's a simple API, a key value store, and it allows you actually not to have to use cookies anymore because cookies are bad. They make you fat, and they're also really bad for your browser because they're on every HTTP request. Like, no matter what you actually load from your server, all the cookies come with it, and it's just a very stupid idea from the start. Local storage happens only on your user's computer. You don't know about what's you don't need to know what's stored there. There's no pinging back and forth of the data. It just goes into the computer, and only on that machine is that data available. And that's exactly what cookies should have been from the beginning. And we have that right now. Offline storage, good idea. Like, okay, just have a manifest file that says, like, okay, if you're offline, still give me that JavaScript, that CSS, and that HTML. So you can still click around the page and can still read it, have a pagination, these kind of things going on. You can put things offline that if you're on the tube, you can actually read. File APIs, I showed before, they're actually getting further now. On Chrome, there's a presentation called HTML5 WoW, which was at Google I.O. this year, where they actually show that you can drag a full folder of images into the browser, and the browser zips them up into one zip file and then uploads them in the background. And that is so cool, because that is so much better than sending like 400 photos one after another in there. And this is also part of that file API that is available for you in HTML5. HTML5 video, we talked about it in length, native browser control, stylable, and has a rich API that actually you can tie into. I can read the seconds that are going on. I know which movie is playing, which track is playing. I can get the dimensions of the video. I can actually do whatever I want with it. I've built a video player that allows you to rotate and zoom a video. I haven't seen any native player yet. And you probably had that as well when you stood like that and filmed something. And then you actually upload it to Flickr, and it's then like this. And you're like, that's not fun. But if I in HTML5, I could turn that video and watch it easily. I, of course, have to override the native controls, because the controls will be turned as well. But that's still something that is simple to do. So this is what you can do now. And I was thinking about the future. My job is partly to think about the future and see what we can do. And one thing that annoys me is we have HTML5. We have all the cool stuff that we can do on the web, but we can't actually use the things that these devices give us. HTML5 to me is a lot about using what is actually there, using hardware. Our users have really cool hardware, and we don't use it to the full extent yet. And we can't access cameras, except for like builds like the one that he showed earlier. We can't have the accelerometer in a very keen fashion. We can actually use it already, but not the way you can actually, in the same way you could do it in a native game. We have a lot of stuff in there, in the hardware, that we are not allowed to get to, and that's just annoying. And I don't want only native apps to be allowed to do that. So one of the future things that we're doing is to using the web itself to break the lock of native applications. Web intents is a way of actually telling the user that you want something from them. So say I want to have a photo. I could say, okay, I have a photo upload functionality. Then I actually have to authenticate with Facebook to get their photos from there. I have to OAuth with Flickr to get the photos from there. And you know these buttons like upload with these 6,000 services. And now you have to write an API for all of calling all these services. And also, more importantly, the user has to enter their data every time they want to authenticate with that service with your application. I don't want to enter my password all the time. That's just stupid. So Android has these intents that we now put on the web as well. So with a web intent, I could just say upload photo or get photo. And then the browser will actually know which service this user is logged in already. So when I log into Facebook, log into Flickr, my browser can know, okay, you're storing photos on Flickr. So if an application has a JavaScript called getPhoto, they can they actually give you a native interface in the browser to get your photos from Flickr, rather than having to upload write your own uploader and to post to Flickr as well. So this makes it much better to actually use all these web services without having to go through the API and OAuth dance and all these things. Boot2Gecko is basically we're building an operating system that actually allows you to build your own hardware and run on any mobile hardware. So it's actually booting into Gecko, the browser engine itself, on any device. We've got a few mobile phones already that we built with another provider together that actually boots into that. Because Android is free, but the hardware isn't. And that's just unfair. I want to know what's going on in the hardware as well. And I don't want to be the person in between fights over patents. Open web applications are things that actually allow you to install apps from the web. So you could go to your website and put a meta tag in your website saying this app is also available as an app. And then when I go there with a browser, it tells me like, okay, I want this as an app. It will be full screen. It will be much better than the normal browser experience, much like Chrome apps are right now. Web APIs, I'm going to go into a second. Browser ID is something I just joined and I just started with. Browser ID is an authentication through the web. So the problem is right now, passwords suck. It's like everybody has millions of passwords. We forget them. That's why we use things like 1Password or use clever passwords like Let Me In or Password 123. When Lifehacker was hacked, 20,000 users had the password Lifehacker. How safe is that? Wonderful. Because we asked all the time for our logins. So we looked at what is out there in terms of login systems, and we found that when things go wrong, everything falls back to an email. You forget your login, it always says like, okay, send me an email to reset my password, and I do that all the time. So what Browser ID does, it allows you to have various identities that are emails. So you could be chrisheimann@gmail.com, you could also be chris64@scene.org, and all of these things actually go into browserid.org at the moment, and later on it will be distributed, much like BitTorrent and these kind of things. So you then actually just go to browser ID, you have a browser ID button, and log in with this identity. You have a single click, select the identity, and all the authentication that is necessary from the web application that you're logging into is then going on through browser ID without you having to enter any passwords or anything anymore. It's a much more distributed way of logging into the web, much like OpenID was before, but instead of domains, we use emails because emails are much more naturally personal to people than domains ever were. So there's some really good stuff going on there, and I'm really excited about it. The next thing that we're doing is that we're getting away with the browser Chrome. So these are application demos that we have right now, and Chrome has a few of those as well, that allowed you, for example, now if you used Google Maps here, you would have a map toolbar instead of the normal URL toolbar. You also see that up there is the little tab instead of the full tab. It's an application tab. And down there we have Google Docs, and you will have the real table calculation menu rather than the URL bar. How many times have you done copy and paste in the browser and clicked the wrong edit button instead of the one that actually is in Google Docs? So you could get away with that, and we would allow you to do things in the browser Chrome through HTML and JavaScript and CSS. We have right-click menus in the Nightly now as well, so you can actually right-click on any element and put your own items into that right-click menu just by putting a menu item element in your HTML. And there's full-screen APIs to allow you to make videos full-screen, images full-screen, whatever you actually want to do. Web APIs define things that we can't access at the moment. Dialer, SMS, address book, clock, calculator, camera, gallery, all these things. So the specs are out there. We're starting to implement them. I have a demo where you can actually take pictures with a tablet in Firefox on mobile devices. That actually works already. And we saw it earlier in Opera has something like that as well. And these are the future things that I'm thinking about. But I need you to stop chasing the shiny, to stop building bells and whistle HTML things and make the basic HTML5 stuff work. Because when that is used and when it works, then we have a much easier way of building these future things, because we already have the base to build on. Right now, we don't have that. So build things with sensible markup. Check for support, then apply. It's as simple as that. Raise the bar for day-to-day websites. You don't need to build an interactive music video with HTML5. I'd be happy if your content management system has a drag and drop uploader. All these little things that you can put in to make the lives easier of our end users, we should be using. Use what improves the experience, not what is cool. Don't go fall for the raindrop animation stuff. Don't do the rotating ad signs for contact me here. One of the most retweeted things I've done lately are CSS3 animated rainbow dividers. Because you remember rainbow dividers from 1997, these things, and now they're with CSS animation, so it's actually hardware accelerated on iPad. Totally pointless, but it was a stupid idea, and it went ballistic. 600 people retweeted that. File bugs and report successes. If you build something cool with HTML5, please tell the browser vendors about this, because we're the kind of people that go out there and talk about HTML5, and your site could be one of our demos that we show here, like pepheads.com and these kind of people. So it makes sense to actually tell the world when you're doing something awesome. And don't limit yourself by what failed in the past. Don't think like, oh, that never worked, so it will not work again. We have a new slate. We start completely new here. So we can do really, really cool stuff if we just dare to use it and dare to do it. So let's go out and play. Thank you very much.